Defender Act, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Defender Act, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
Session of the board and management of WBAI New York. Their intention is to take the station off the air at 2 o'clock this afternoon. The demands are, we demand, management recognize the WBAI union as the sole bargaining agent for the WBAI staff, paid and unpaid. Management must negotiate with the WBAI union through the grievance committee of the WBAI union to resolve whatever grievances members of the WBAI union bring to the attention of said committee. These grievances include recent unilateral actions taken by the management and which management to date has refused to reconsider. 3. There will be a moratorium on any changes of the WBAI format.
Pre-recorded with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. 6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. 6 foot 6 above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take it to another mental level. The management and local advisory board of radio station WBAI has indicated their intention to take WBAI off the air in response to the following demands that were presented this morning. The program director may not perform more than one job function and may not hold any regularly scheduled programming slot.
This is WBAI in New York City.
We interrupt this broadcast
with an official report
from the Atlantica
Radio
Network.
In compliance with our own Atlantica mandate.
Issued at a secret Atlantica board meeting.
The minutes of which
are being burned.
At this very moment.
Atlantica Radio is in the process
of accumulating eligible radio stations.
Congratulations.
Your radio station,
WBAI,
is under consideration.
And may soon be part of
the Atlantica Radio Network Empire.
If you would like
to help your radio station
become part of
the Atlantica Radio Network Empire,
turn to your radio now
and recite the Atlantica mantra.
You are my boss.
You are my boss.
You are my boss.
The Atlantica Radio Network Empire knows
that well-disciplined producers
and listeners alike
improve
the radio
listening
experience.
Now, you just listen to me. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. You have asked questions in a hostile, combative, and even disrespectful tone, and you have never been able to combat the facts I have given you. Now, you listen to this.
You are my boss.
You are my boss.
You are my boss.
You're talking, you were saying, Robert Knight has joined us.
that they were stealing. They were stealing the election.
I was just reflecting over the general media coverage recently. First of all, Bush stole the election. All right, and the attention with the news focus, everybody intensely watching that every day. That stole the Christmas shopping season because it wasn't until the last minute they could run those sentimental old movies and make you go out and to the mall and buy stuff. And then the Supreme Court stole the process. And
like Mr. Smith goes to Washington.
Everything is being preempted. These are truly the final days of the year 2000.
of the millennium, the real millennium. I mean, the millennium is really beginning. So, Robert,
doesn't it say, Mene, Tekeluposhin? counted, weighed, and found wanting?
Yes.
Ooh. Let's go to the phones.
You're scaring me, Robert.
Well.
Forget that a lot.
So, Robert, what's your analysis? I know you were on your show earlier, but just for people who might not have listened to your show, just tuned in, what's your analysis of this whole weird situation?
A paroxysm of insecurity. So, yeah, it can be brief.
So, as FDR said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Oh, we do have things to fear. I mean, there are those tangible among us who are not here because of the bannings, which are soon, by any rational assessment, to be reversed. Mm-hmm. Wake-up call will be reinstituted and continue. There will be Sharan. There will be Bernard. There will be Eileen Sutton, a fabulous contributor to the newsroom. Serene Roberts, one of the parts of the soul of the station. And also, justice for Valerie. Bessie Wash says that is the one firing that, for her, is non-negotiable. But the other things are in Utrice's hands, and Utrice has the intelligence to hear the voice.
Well, maybe everybody could get together and negotiate an end to this. I would hope a one that would be mutually beneficial to all and to the listeners, and bring WBAI forward. And I think going on in this kind of conflictory nature is detrimental. We have a fundraising drive coming up.
I believe that conflict is an essential part of isometric muscular exercising. And in the end, the right arm doesn't try to choke the left arm.
But don't we have a fundraising drive coming up?
Yes.
How do we deal with that?
We must be,
I have a little fear
we
about
must
that.
Be honest, we must be fair, we must be inclusive. The maximizing of the station is about who is included to be on the air and not about exclusion. Mm-hmm. So I'm confident that Utrice has the wisdom to reverse the bannings mm-hmm. before the marathon. And to reinstitute the program director, because clearly the programming has suffered in the absence of the program director.
What do you think of that, Bob Fass?
Well, you know, history has a way of not happening too differently the second time around. And I don't remember that people were that welcomed back into the station.
Tell us what happened.
You endured a great period of pain. It's hard to, we talk about, oh, so-and-so was fired, and fired is just one word. But the sudden horror of having your life's culture, music, work, possessions, papers, address, books, this and that,
scattered in the street by the marshal. That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah.
You're afraid that, they're going to repossess the children and the dog and everything else, because suddenly you not only do you not have a job, but you're, the word has gone out that you're difficult to manage. Mm. I don't want to go into the details of it. Fortunately, it's a long time ago.
But it has aftershocks. The that immediately measurable part is just
well. One thing I think is apropos. How is it dealt with?
Demos and Phobos.
How were people brought back?
Well, in the case of bees, the same way they were taken out by simply capricious eating.
Well, there were 16 of us who were offered or presented with a letter that we were to sign if we wanted to be considered and interviewed for our jobs again. The letter basically said, I regret the events of February 11th, 1977, and I take full responsibility for them, and I promise never to do anything like that again.
Did Pablo Guzman have to sign one of those letters?
I think he probably wrote it.
What was this letter for?
Back in 1977, all the folks who shut down and seized the transmitter and shut down the radio station for a month had to sign a loyalty oath to get back on the air.
All right, because I got
Bob, do you still have your copy of the loyalty oath?
You did. Well,
it's very 50s. Only somebody who grew up in the 50s
not,
that did
I
it.
I did not sign it. Abe Ague, who is a lawyer in California now, and I think last I heard of him, he won $64,000 on some television program.
Well, he was a weekend news director here, right. We have great people coming out of news.
Abe Ague and I refused to sign it. Other people signed it and came back in. No one was happy except one person who added a paragraph of things that she felt she was responsible for.
That's BAI all the way. Emma Goldman, man.
I once got a ban and bar letter for going on to a military base to protest nuclear weapons in upstate New York. And I remember we all got out, like about 1,000 of us, and we all burned them together. That was fun.
What, saying you could never set foot on
yeah, right.
Your Honor, I object. This is only a partial representation of my crimes.
How I got back in, I used to say, as I crawled up the side of the building. And I got knocked down a few times. There were people who picketed every time there was a BAI event, carrying signs and giving out leaflets. People still send out one particular...
The two Johns.
Yep, the two Johns. I only know one John.
The other one was a legalistic arguer. I can't remember.
Hmm. Well, then there were some radical lawyers who... took up my case.
Valerie Van Isler was there at the time, right? She was one of the activists of you guys at that period?
Valerie and I kind of came in about the same time. And
she was really a supporter of... Tell us a little bit about Valerie's role so people who don't know much about Valerie can know something of her role.
Well, I didn't really know Valerie very well at that time, except that we went to a lot of meetings. Bernard was at them too. Went to a lot of meetings about how we could, sometimes it was called crack the blacklist at BAI, and other times it was called shake hands again. But, there were a few different approaches, but right. Basically what happened was that some new people came on the board who thought that what had happened was atrocious. And they convinced the others, or they wore the others down. And I was allowed to crawl back up the side of the...
Then John Scagliotti came in. That was a while later.
Yep.
Right. maybe some folks can call up with some of the later history, because there's all this history of the 80s, you know, about the union, about battles with program directors. Ed Phillips knows a lot, and he's going to be on what? He's going to be on tomorrow morning, right, on the morning show?
Not as far as I know.
I heard that he was. I don't know.
I'm supposed to be the substitute host.
Oh, really? So what do I? Everything's changing fast. I'm sure it's changing faster than I know what's going on. Yeah, go ahead, Johnny.
No, I was just saying hi to Robert. I thought that was his voice.
Hey.
How you doing?
We haven't had time to take too many calls because we've had so much to say ourselves. But
I'll give him room. Let him talk.
Yeah, take a call.
Yeah, take a call. You're on the radio.
Hi, yeah, this is Cloudy at the Yorktown Shelter.
Hey, Cloudy.
Yeah, I have a bunch of comments. First of all, I don't know if you heard that program. I don't know if is Robert Knight there from Earthwatch. Today's, or Wednesday's, I should say, the 27th program of Michio Kaku about these sonic booms they were sending under the ocean that were killing whole pods of whales.
Yeah.
Like 17, 20 whales at a time. That's how they were beaching all of them.
The very low-frequency sonar. Yeah, picture that. If 180 decibels and up is deadly for humans.
This time I was counting on the whales to save us.
200, 300 decibels.
Yeah.
There's a possibility that they were testing the microphones. Do you know that the planet has been laced with the most sophisticated listening system in the solar system? Well, possibly excluding some satellites. That during the Cold War, with tens, perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars, the Navy and intelligence services with submarines placed a latticework of microphones for sonar so that they could tell what they were having for dinner inside a Russian submarine in the bay outside of Norway. And it's an untold scientific story, what's going on under the ocean. And
it sounds like
foolishness,
these explosions. Passive monitoring microphone, as insidious as it is relatively harmless. But when it's the active monitoring, where they're blasting these 300 decibel bursts through the ocean.
They're not just bursts.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Right. And they said that this is an ongoing and perhaps even expanding program. If it wasn't on Michio Kaku, I might have thought it was just some screwball.
I was listening to him.
Sonar was abandoned by the military when radar came in practically, and it just kind of hung on, but they thought they had found a new way to bounce audible signals off objects and detect them.
Well, I think to use a
radar
signal,
just like totally irradiate the entire ocean with sound, and then they have satellites that can pick up every anomaly. So they figure, just ring it like a bell and look for anomalies.
Anyway, I was also somewhat appalled by it. I mean, I'm not, Utrecht Leeds' number one fan or anything like that, but some of the comments that were made, there was something of racial overtone about some white person, Freund, who had been appointed under a black man to be.
I didn't hear this.
On this program. It was very appalling to hear that. And
you may have heard an allusion, and it was a reference to not calling Jim a white face, but referring to an ethnocultural phenomenon that was written about in one of Samori's famous books, one of the most important transnational racial studies called Black Skin, White Masks. Now, if I did not convey that reference adequately and you took it that way, I apologize.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway,
you know me. You know I wouldn't do that.
Right. Well, when you comment about somebody in their absence, and it brings in especially those kinds of issues, I was very jarring.
Well, when we have a 50,000-watt radio station, we're never in anybody's absence.
The very existence of that awkward and odd circumstance during the time of Wake Up Call is predicated on the absence of Bernard White and Sharon Harper and Janice K. Bryant. So you cannot belatedly invoke that term of judgment without first acknowledging that the very existence of an interloper on that program is about somebody's absence.
People are touchy on the subject of race. You know, people
are
very touchy. You know, they often get it wrong. You know, sometimes they get it. Sometimes they get it right when we don't even know that we're saying stuff. You know,
right?
People are very touchy. That's why they try to use it yeah. to split us apart.
Thanks to the neo-Darwinists and scientists and their fascist
military. For this
sort
of thing, if they set aside a certain hour every week to comment on radio issues, on WBAI issues,
report
then if
from the listener.
About somebody, they would
what
know
a good
to
idea.
That 1 hour. And then someone had a comment about a broadcaster, then it would be regular every week. People would know that on that hour to talk about radio business, it's okay.
The alteration of our full range of broadcasting and the capricious changes and eliminations of people without due process that has happened here is a matter of more than one or two individuals or one or two
yes.
programs, and it is a visceral part about the way we focus, come together, and assemble a community to take on the even greater oppressors of this world. So I disagree with your assessment that it's a matter that should be relegated to 1 hour somewhere.
Well, when it deals with certain kinds of matters of personal nature, yes. But I must say that...
Did you also hear me defending Jim as a brilliant person?
Yeah, I'm not talking about...
You were talking about one part of what you thought you heard, but did you also note and acknowledge that as well?
It wasn't the criticism of Jim Freund. I think it was the criticism of Eutrice Lee. That was but anyway, whatever. I was... Alan Haber, when this issue first came up about Pacifica, I think made the definitive overarching comment about all this to me, which was basically this is a policy level. It's not just coming from Pacifica. The system, the power elite, want to silence everyone to the left of the Democratic Party. That's what's happening, and it's going to continue to happen, and that's the program that's unfolding in this country. And, for example, the suppression of effective, timely filing of a suit, so it would have gotten to the Supreme Court before the election was decided, on the Voting Rights Act. This was suppressed underground. This is really a marker. I think this election, the election itself and the aftermath.
Not a bad analysis. I think many of us agree with much of it. And my only point is that under certain circumstances, you do not have time to fight polite. But we are trying to induce a mentation where that is in the imminent possibilities.
I understand. It is there is a difficult balancing act because these issues are very pressing. I did see Sunday this weekend's New York Times, Saturday I think it was, and
the one that was totally wrong. What about BAI? Or about the...
It's the same one they always print. When Savory died, they printed the same
article. Same story article.
Wacky radio station, vaguely reminiscent of the 60s.
Yes. Well, I have so many calls, Claudia. Let me move on. Thank you.
Sure.
Appreciate it. And you're on the radio.
Yeah, good morning. A historical analogy in the form of a quick question, a few quick thoughts. The question being, were Wojciech Jaruzelski and Marshall Petain patriots or traitors or both? And in terms of this notion of Eutrice being intelligent, Larry Van Isler was considered an upbeat, intelligent producer in the early 80s. But one thing for sure, and Robert, play the tape back. You were not the one who made the big thing about white man Freund replacing black man.
No, that's
white.
Not my point. I respect him as a mind.
It was not your point, but it was Sinin. Sinin played this...
Oh, thank goodness, it wasn't.
And she gets a free ride from white liberal thinking people like Fast and DiRienzo.
Okay. Now
well, that's an insult. You call me a liberal?
Now that you slapped
you call me a liberal?
You think like one. That's how you were raised. And
are you a student of history?
Yes, I am.
Does the name Vidkun mean anything to you?
Not offhand. Tell me about it.
It's a name, the first name of a man whose surname is Quisling.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. I'm looking for someone who's especially knowledgeable on that Norwegian personality. If anybody knows, give a call to 209-2997, and we'll hook up and talk.
Okay. What about the point about Jaruzelski and Petain? Because you can make an argument that they were acting patriotically. I'll do it right now. Hello?
Huh? I'll grant you the point.
We'll grant you the point. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, fuck you.
What? That's very...
He funny. Explained.
Yeah. Jeez, hang on. You're on the radio.
Yeah, hi, this is Joel here.
Hey, Joel.
How you doing?
All right.
Hey, Joel.
Your comment? Joel?
That was his comment.
Hello? Oh, what was his comment? I didn't hear it.
I'm Joel.
I'm Joel. I'm sorry, Joel. We just accidentally cut you off because I lost Joni. I'm trying to get her back on. Let me just get another person on the line. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Astro.
Hi, Astro.
You know, one of the great magazines in this city is New York Magazine, and the December issue has a very interesting article by Frank McCord and other great writers. But one of the things in
there...
What's
it about?
Yeah, you know one of the things I read in there? That Charlie Rangel, the congressman from Harlem, said that he...
Sort of off subject. Come on.
Rally.
I know, it's totally off subject. Sorry. You're on the radio. Hello? You're on the air.
Could I clarify the comment that I made before? Is that all right?
Sure thing.
On Robert Knight's show? What I said was the following. I can't repeat the exact words, but the feeling is definitely here. I wondered why a black woman would substitute a white man to do the job that was a black man's job.
By the way, I just want to take a moment to say it's about 5 minutes after 3, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, and continue your comment. Thank you.
And when I made that comment, I made it the same way I would make any comment where I see that people are pitted against each other. And the fact that she's black does not change that reality for me. Just like Colin Powell is put in a position where he just because he's black, he all of a sudden represents all black people.
Mentioning Colin Powell, do you know how he first came to the attention how he first got famous?
No, tell me.
He was the captain or lieutenant who did the preliminary report saying that nothing had really happened at My Lai.
Yeah, he was hiding My Lai. Yeah. But he was not even...
So that's how he rose. And his son, I believe, is going to be the new FCC commissioner.
He?
Powell's son.
Oh, really?
His son?
He's going to be the new FCC? He's going to replace Kennard? So what's his track record, his son? We don't know.
DNA?
Now, I know...
What's Bush Jr.'s track record?
DNA?
He's the right
Zero.
Father.
Genes? I don't know.
The reason why I called to say this to clarify is because I think it's really important for everyone to be able to say what they have to say. I really don't know who the caller was who mentioned that and found that I was having a free ride, which I find so fascinating. It reminds me of when people tell me that Puerto Rico has a gravy train we're given food stamps.
You can get food stamps.
Because we can get food stamps, but yet we can't have our own land. And part of our land has been constantly being bombarded for the past 60 years, much longer than I have existed. And that bombardment has caused us countless cases of cancer and other diseases that come from being radiated and being exposed to chemical warfare. But anyway, I found it fascinating that somebody would want to call and make that comment. I have the right to make any comment I want, and I see Utrecht as a human being, not as an icon that I cannot criticize. And because I'm a black woman doesn't mean that I can't see that as a black person, we are all subject to the most erroneous behavior where we not only disrespect ourselves, we disrespect each other, regardless of color. Thank you for letting me make that comment.
Sure thing.
Take care.
Well, you know, we should know better. We shouldn't allow that to get into our heads. We should know better, that people like us know that race doesn't matter, and to let that get into your head is.
But he made the comment, and I think.
No, no, I know,
I
but I'm saying.
Say
yeah, of course,
know,
of course. It's very important, yeah, but we know
I'm
better. We all know better than to make that an issue.
I believe he was trying to point out that they were trying to play with you.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Don't let that get into your head. Because that's the way to diffuse people's movement. Any movement can be diffused by creating conflict. You know, if everybody's infighting and coming up with these false issues to bicker over, that's exactly what they are. It's false issues.
And
what's your name?
This is Paul.
Paul Garin.
Paul Garin.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're the
video
one
guy who, among other things, caught the video of the cops beating up protesters in Tompkins Square Park in 1988.
With the tape on their badges.
Right. With the
and
tape.
You
on.
Might remember Paul Garin on the back on top of a van.
No, I know. I know.
With holding a video camera.
I have Clayton Patterson. That picture.
So we know better.
Shot.
We know what the media is about, and we know what they are trying to put into our heads. So we know better. That's what I'm saying. We know better, and we shouldn't let it get us fighting amongst ourselves. So let's move on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sinan.
Good night.
Hey, thanks. Good night.
Now tell me, Paul, was it from your video that they were really able to get the fact that the badges were taped and covered?
Yes, that was. I think that was the first to really expose that. In fact, that was a still frame on the front page of the New York Post saying cops hid badges. Right. In fact, the tape even caught at least one police officer who absolutely removed his badge. So, yeah, it was... Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even working that shift. He was there as a volunteer.
I guess.
But you're like all of us at BAI. You
know? Well,
But that's why we know better, though, and we shouldn't let the media get into our heads. We really see that this chance here at the station to air our voice and not be diffused or discredited or made invisible by commercialization that's just trying to sell you a product or something like that. You know, we have to assert our presence and not fight amongst ourselves. We have to rise above that.
I'm dealing with the technology here. You know, Bessie Wash's first promise was to fix all the equipment up here at number 9.
Okay.
You like that idea, Joni?
That would be great.
I'm Paul DiRienzo, by the way. Miss Joe Marie Moosey joining us by telephone from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we have Bob Fass, Paul Garin here in the studio. And it's about
WBAI.
Yes, we're the studio of WBAI in New York. And it's 12 minutes after 3 in the morning. And we've been discussing a lot of things. And there's a lot of people calling. And it's sort of exciting because we're really at a cusp. At a point of change, and that happens in life, and how we deal with it, it really is going to determine the future of the station. And it's my understanding that 2,000 people attended a mass meeting in support of Bernard White, in support of Valerie Van Isler, and in support of Sharon Harper and the others who are not allowed to enter. Yet I think there is a possibility for some negotiating room. I get the impression there's a little negotiating room there, and hopefully with the strength of all these folks, we'll be able to really effect a change, a democratic change for the better for WBAI. I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing, and I like the idea of electing an LAB. I like the idea of having a democratic component for the listeners. I think it's the way to go, and I think it's really the only way to go at this point, and it's been done. And if they could do it in Berkeley and in the Bay Area, why not in New York?
Is that part of the 5-year plan?
I don't think it's part of their future plan.
It has to be. The 5-year plan has to be amended to include that.
Right, right. It would have to, and we have to just do it. I think what the report I read earlier Coalition for Democratic Pacifica electing the local advisory board a major step forward for the movement to democratize Pacifica and strengthen the challenge to the Pacifica National Board. And you can read more at www.wbai.net and www.savepacifica.net. And I like the idea of the listeners, of people who I guess become members of WBAI. It would give rise to, we would be members again. It would be more than just donations or just purchasing tapes and products, right? It would be about becoming a member again, something we really haven't called. We haven't really called contributors members in a long time.
But we did sell memberships on the fundraising show.
Right, that's officially what they are, but we really haven't sold it as that in a long time, as a group, as a station, not for a long time. It's mostly, we've been selling products, you know, and it's great, it's been very lucrative, but it hasn't been really enough. And you know why? Because it's only selling products, and it has, there's a built-in economic limitation to just churning out, like a mail order house churning out products, because it costs money to mail the stuff out, I guess. There's an expert, Alan Markman, who's the bookkeeper here for years and years. He knows the whole story. We need more members. More people have to become members of WBAI and actually pay the $55 membership fee and get the certificate and their name on the line as a member. And each of those members then could vote for the LAB. And the LAB, the local advisory board...
Oh, is that how you would decide who is eligible for voting? Is that the technique?
I think that's how it's done, but I think I don't want to impose anything, because who knows what they might work out in a situation that would have to be amenable to New York
City. Well, because earlier when you were talking about it, I thought about that issue. I wonder, how do you determine who's eligible to vote in the thing? Would it be anybody who wanted to, who had an interest in BAI? Or would it be restricted on a financial basis that way?
Well, membership...
I mean, because that's kind of weird, too, because people do different things to make contributions besides send money. You know, some people, through their participation or volunteer work, or they come and answer the phones, or... I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people who might not have the money to give
it should be
might
really
be involved,
as
you know?
Inclusive as possible, but what who's going to determine
this?
What would
be the criteria?
Right. How do you come up with this now? I think you have to just take public comment.
Right.
I mean, in a way, I would like it to be anyone who wanted to vote. If
listeners
you wanted
have to
participate in the process, that you would be permitted to.
You know,
is that about
it should always be by means. Because what it really stands for is the support for these voices. And if there are enough numbers out there who believe that they want to be a part of this and contribute to the support of these voices. Sometimes they may participate, sometimes they may partake. But if they want to be able to sustain this and not see it disappear in this sea of corporatism that we're seeing drowning us now, then they really have to do what they can. So if there's very wealthy people out there, they should participate as much as they can. And if there are people who are living on the street, then, well, they should just listen and stay warm.
Well, I think there's one thing we can't never lose sight of, the what it costs to run the radio station, because New York City being a very expensive place, WBAI costs a lot to run, more than all the other radio stations. And there's a potential to make more money than all the rest of the radio stations. But right now, we really have been barely breaking even and not making enough to grow.
You know, one of the ways that BAI has always grown in the past is through crisis. And when there is a crisis that escalates to such an extent that we begin to get a lot of media attention and people begin... as they work at their jobs and the rest of the media, to acknowledge the contribution that WBAI has made to their consciousness and their view of, and vision of what a reporter should be, WBAI expands exponentially. And like dissidence and conflict are real. I mean, if the image of WBAI is really, it incorporates that. We are a bunch of people who really care about ideas and free speech, and a bunch of people who can have terrible fist fights about the things that we call democracy. And there have been some... Well, that's tomorrow. I'll tell you about that tomorrow.
Right.
I'll
right.
tell you some about
Bob,
about some
Bob,
of the
course,
fist
will be
fights.
On tomorrow at midnight, yeah. And and so we're about to grow. I think we can all agree that we're at a cusp right now. You know, that basically BAI is going to go through like the stage, like a chrysalis thing to really come out and be a bigger station, very possibly, if the right decisions are made now. A bigger, more influential station than it's ever been before. I think we're at the verge of that happening, and I think that's why there's so much attention on us right now. That's why there's a New York Times story. You know, the Bush is in power. We had this phony election. They're going to go to war in Colombia. They're going to go to war in the Middle East. They're going to, you know, the usual, and worse, though. It's going to be worse than ever. And the war on drugs is going to be overarching drive behind everything, you know, and then it's going to like reach into people's homes here in the United States, and they're going to say, you know, there's drugs everywhere. We have to eliminate it. We can eliminate it. We have the power to eliminate it. And this is going to be the excuse. And you're going to see it under Bush, which, you know, they're calling him W?
Yeah, just add an M.
I was going to call him Dubia. Dubia.
No, just add an M. Dumbia.
I was going to call him Dubia, as in Dubia. But, you know, we'll find out about his party days as well later on. And, and you know, BAI is going to be there to expose all this stuff, I'm sure, and will be more in the limelight and more at the influencing the political landscape than ever before in its history. And we know that the next 50 years, you know, are going to have these kind of incidents, these things that are happening. And
we're facing it now. There are so many ways that that are being foisted upon us to silence the voice. In fact, Albert, in the Narco News reporter down in South America,
yeah.
That's right. They're bombarding him with libel suits and cyber warfare to silence his website and to shut him down.
That's right.
That's just another example to crush any free voice that is not part of the, you know, PR presentation. I think this guy was basically served papers by this narco lobbying firm. I think Vernon Jordan's firm, Aiken Gump, was trying to...
I think it's a law firm that's representing...
the president of the Bank of Mexico.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, if you go to...
Him and Mario Menendez.
Look at the site, narconews.com.
Yeah, it's a great website.
And this was actually under attack this week. We mirrored this. narco.news.xs2.net is the address. And so this is to mirror that, because the other site, narconews.com, was under attack, and they were trying to shut it down. Plus, they were trying to serve this guy with papers to sue him for libel for his news journalism.
They wanted him to waive his right to regular service of process.
That's, yeah, they yeah, actually yeah. attempted, yeah, they tried to serve him,
to get him to say
unsuccessfully,
that was,
and,
right.
and they then tried to get him to waive service so they could carry on with him in default or whatever. But I think he's coming to New York to hear this case. I believe he's going to hear.
Yeah,
it
I haven't then. Heard from Al about the next time
there was an article,
be in New York.
Article in The Voice. So look at narconews.com, and if you can't get to that, go to narco.news.xs2.net. And if you've switched to namespace, it's just narco.news.
That's the mirror site for narconews.com.
Right, and an excellent site for information about exactly what we've been talking about. The growing warfare in the around the war on drugs, it's turning into like a real hot war on drugs and on the people of Colombia, and with the U.S. sending a couple of $1 billion worth of helicopters.
Yeah, Al does a daily change on that website. I mean, he really right. actively runs the website, so it's a great thing to check into, like, often.
Right.
And so the war on drugs is also another war on speech, because it's trying to chill this guy.
Right, right. And so, yeah, and BAI is at the heart of it. Imagine WBAI is really sort of a platform for this information to get out to a lot of people. I mean, this is happening live.
Well, remember that Mario appeared on our show after being denied a visa for 31 years to come to the United States. And he came to the United States and immediately came to the studios at WBAI. And Robert stayed and talked with him, too. And he and Al were on our show before they did the symposium at Columbia Law School. And he's been on our show again recently by phone from Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, you know, what we've been doing, and this is what we need to protect, and all the other programs, you know, that that happen throughout the day on WBAI. We want to protect them all, and we want
so
to
many great shows,
yeah. Right? And we want to also be prepared for this great leap that we know is coming, where we're going to be more at the center of attention than ever before, and we're going to have the potential to really grow this radio station, and we should be prepared for it because it's going to be a wild ride. As we can already see.
So far, so wild.
We can already see this is just the beginning. And you know, because there's really things that are happening, you know, and you hear about it every day on this radio station. You know, where else will you hear it? There's nothing else like it. As Bessie Wash was even saying the other day, you know, there's nothing like
it. She was
like
on
this.
The air, huh?
She was on the air, yeah, with
sorry, I missed that.
Utrice, and she, you know, that was one interesting thing I thought, really interesting thing that she said is that, you know, NPR does not own any radio stations. These five stations, Pacifica, are the only thing like this in the entire United States.
Oh, NPR is like a syndicated show sold to different radio stations.
Right.
It's actually, this is interesting because Pacifica was started as a private nonprofit foundation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is, you know, the theory behind this namespace project is really the same. When I heard the Lou Hill readings, it really rung a bell with me because it makes so much sense to own and operate. It makes so much sense. And rather than, you know, I look at this, the difference running a network as what NPR does is what we call co-location in a way. You know, you buy a server rack in some facility somewhere and you can transmit your stuff from there. So they're, you know, syndicating their time. But owning and operating is important because that's the only way you can guarantee access. And somehow having a voice in the ownership and operations
of actual concrete,
yeah, transmitters,
50,000 watt radio stations.
You know, what can happen is if they actually start really corporatizing.